Welcome to the Swim Swam Podcast. I'm your host, Coleman Hodges. Joining us today, we have newly minted world champion in the 200 IM, Finley Knox. Finley, how's it going, man?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to sit down and chat with you. You had a big program and a big world championships in Doha. So first of all, what were you expecting to get, or what were you hoping to get out of just the experience of going to a February world championships in an Olympic year?
Yeah, I think going in, it's obviously a different time of year. A lot of big names weren't there, especially Team Canada. We're bringing a pretty young team and a pretty fresh team there. So just it's as simple as you can put it. It's just a learning opportunity and kind of a checker point. You can't really judge too much on what others are doing because everyone's got different plans. Obviously, the Olympics is the main part of this cycle. So this World Championships is literally a checker, like a guide point, a stepping stone for this year. And you kind of have to just stick with your plans and go in with just confidence and obviously every meet have fun. So for us, it's definitely a checker point, and as it was for a lot of athletes there as well.
Yeah. And I mean, you won your first world title in the 200 IM, Canada's first world championship gold medal since 2007 when Brent Hayden won the 100, tied for the win in the 100 freestyle. But tell me about that race specifically, and then I'm going to get into the rest of the meet. But, this is kind of, you might see it differently, but this seems like it might be your bread and butter event. It's certainly an event that you've made a lot of improvement in over the last few years. What did you want to accomplish going into this race specifically? And how do you feel like you executed not only just the final, but moving through the prelims and semis as well?
Yeah, 200 IM is definitely, I would say, my main event. Growing up, I did sort of US, I did USRPT training, and with that, you do every single stroke, and it kind of came naturally to me. I was able to kind of get a grasp on all four strokes, and when I kind of joke, it's like I'm pretty average at all four strokes, but you put it together, I can be pretty good. So yeah, that's kind of been my main event. I was kind of rocking between breaststroke and medley at the Junior Pan Pacs in 2018, and then I kind of really had my first glimpse of success in the 200 IM at the Youth Olympic Games, and since then it's just kind of been the one that's progressed, and I quite enjoy it because it's interesting. It's fun to watch because there's some changes. You'll see some athletes be good at some strokes and not so much. And for me, it's like it just makes training more interesting. I'm able to switch strokes up, and yeah, it's a fun event, and that's something that I've been definitely working on, and it's definitely been my event that's progressed the most and is the focus. Yeah, so going into Worlds this year, obviously when the psych sheets come out, you see a lot of big names not in. It's kind of an open field. Obviously you got some very fast guys in there like Duncan, Daya, Carson, Shane, Alberto. So it's not an easy field, but again, it is February. You have no idea kind of where people are at, what people are planning on, if they're going to rest, shave, and taper for this meet, if they're going in into this meet heavy under work. And and it just made things easier for me to just go in and really just swim my own race and stick to what I had planned on doing, which is trying to progress from last year. And the summer for me wasn't spectacular, so trying to go in and just learn from my mistakes that I made there and improve. I don't like going into swim meets with outcome goals. You can't control what other people are going to do. I can control how I'm going to execute a race and how I'm going to swim. But I can't control what the person next to me is doing. So I never go into races wanting to win or do something like that. It's putting yourself in a position where that could happen. But yeah, so this was actually my first prelim semis finals for a 200 meter distance, which was fun. It was I'd done prelim semis finals for the 100 fly at Commonwealth Games. And that was weird, just doing 300 flies in the span of 2 days. But yeah, for me, it's just kind of going through those processes, being able to execute a morning swim, get through to the semis, being able to do a semi swim, get into the final, and then obviously when you're in the final, giving it everything you have. So just going in there and just having fun and taking everything in. And I learned a lot from a lot of different parts of this week, not only the 200 IM, but many other races. But I try to attack every single swim meet, whether it's World Champs, Olympic Trials, World Trials, tiny little swim meets that we have in Vancouver, with the same attitude, the same process, just to go in there, have fun, learn from it, and ultimately try to make those swims me to help me become a better athlete.
Yeah. Can you tell me specifically about that 200 IM final and what you wanted to, or if you had a race plan, how you wanted to execute the race and how you give yourself a rating on how you feel like you did that in that heat?
Yeah, so I think it's actually funny. Afterward, like straight after the race, when we got out of the pool and we're getting our interview, the first thing going through my head was, man, that my back and breast must have been so good. And then I ended up seeing the splits, and the breaststroke itself was actually horrible. So in my head, I was like, the back and breast would have been fantastic, but I ended up dropping time for my previous best, mainly from the butterfly and freestyle. Going into the race, I was, if you, I'll say I'm lucky. Some people would say it's obviously how you execute it, but I was in lane seven. So I don't know if you've talked to anyone, any of the backstrokers, but the roof was not straight, and it was pretty difficult to stay straight in this pool swimming backstroke if you're not a great backstroker, and that's something
This
I struggle with.
was a big story of the whole meet, right? Like people were hitting their hands on the lane lines doing backstroke, like the whole meet.
It was I was watching it was the final of the 100 backstroke, and one of the guys came in 5 meters to the wall and just crunched the lane rope. And so after seeing that, my 200 IMs in a few days, and I'm starting to panic because I've had my fair share of crashing to the lane line. And but in lane seven, there's this pillar that ran. I don't know if it was cameras or for sound, but there was a pillar that ran over top of lane seven. It curved a little bit, but it was over top of lane seven. And in the prelims and semis, I was over in lane three, and I was really just trying to spot with the eyes. And I just really, backstroke's not my strongest stroke, so definitely kind of threw things off a little bit. So going into the final, it was the main focus was stay straight on backstroke, and then obviously the other things, attacking the fly. You have Shane, who's a quick butterflyer, so just going out there, attacking it, using your strengths, trying my best to stay straight. I spotted off that pillar, and it's curved, and I swam the race, and I curved in my lane. Luckily, I didn't hit anything, which was good. And then going into the breaststroke, just kind of trying to stick with my technique. And breaststroke's been a little bit rocky, it because it is very technical. Sometimes it can be on, sometimes it can be off. And in the semi, it was very much off. So just trying to correct a few things from the semifinal. Obviously, it wasn't a great split, but in the race, no one else really had a fantastic split up near the front. And then being in lane seven, on my breast to free turn, I got a glimpse of kind of the whole field being out on the outside, and I could see that Carson was already pushed off the wall, and Shane was turning. Dyer right next to me was right there. But then as soon as you push off the wall, those lane ropes are massive. You can't really see anything. So it's just absolutely give it everything you have and make sure you're grabbing the water, you're not giving it 100% right off the wall, so you're not going to fatigue on the finish, and just get your head down and touch the wall as hard as you can.
I appreciate this insight, because this explains a lot about this backstroke narrative of this meet. But also just about that race specifically, and how going into the 150, I am much more familiar with Carson Foster and Shane Casas as athletes, just because I live in America. And I was like, all right, I think Carson's gonna get this. He split 143 on the 800 free relay in the meet. So it's like, yeah, I think he's got a good half, or a good back 50. And then you put your head down and you got the job done. So congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
That was a great swim. A new personal best as well. 156. I
Six.
don't know, six. How do you feel about that time, just generally, but specifically, right now for February?
Yeah, I think obviously it is the best time, and I should be happy with it. Don't get me wrong, I am happy. It's always nice to be able to see progression. Before the Olympic year, before COVID, I was 159, and then after COVID leading into the Olympics, I was 158 and 158 low, and then 157, 157 low. So, slowly chunking away at those times. Obviously happy with that. If you look at the splitting, it's not fantastic. I'll be the first to admit it. It's not very impressive how it was split, but again, being February, it's all information and data that we're gathering for Olympic trials and hopefully the Olympics. So seeing the breast split was off, obviously you got to do some work to figure out how to fix that, and it's just all information, and obviously got to be happy with a personal best in February, and take all that and progress that through to the end of the year.
Yeah. And then just looking at the rest of your meet, how did you feel about outside of the 200 IM? I know you swam the 100 fly. I know you were on some relays. So just how would you analyze your experience in Doha from a competitive standpoint overall?
Yeah, it was a great meet. Had some great swims, had some kind of rocky swims as well. So it wasn't perfect, but I would say honestly, my favorite swim, the swim I'm probably most proud of, was the 50 fly on day one. It's just a fun event. I was really just using it as, a first race meet kind of de-stressor. You just go in, have some fun, shake the cobwebs, and ended up going pretty quick for myself, and I got the Canadian record by a few 100s from Josh and Ilya, which was kind of fun. But that was just kind of a good starting tone to the meet. And then the rest of the meet, it definitely progressed and got a lot harder. Obviously fatigue building up. It's an 8-day meet. Everyone knows if you're doing multiple swims, multiple relays, the fatigue is going to catch up. And this was definitely one of my trickiest schedules on the international stage. At the last few worlds, I've had a few relays, a few individual swims, but nothing where it was, prelims, semis, finals of an event, prelims, semis of a few other events, relays, prelims, finals. So a lot of mileage of racing, but again, it's all learning, and one day if I'm not feeling great, the next, figuring out how to recover better, how to what I need to do to get myself back into form to swim well. So just a lot of stuff happened over the 8 days, and you're just trying as best you can to soak it all in and learn from it. So yeah, some very good swims, some rocky swims, but overall it was a very successful meet and something I'm very proud of.
So the high point was Canadian record in the 50 fly, which is totally fair. What was a low point for you, or just a swim that you was rocky, in your words?
Yeah, I think I definitely wasn't too thrilled with my 100 butterfly. It's I had the speed in the 50. I knew that. I knew I had that fast speed, and then the tuned IM. Obviously, it's a different stroke. In a sense, you're breathing every stroke. It's more flowy, and I had the front end speed of that. But just with the 100, picking up the stroke rate, having the mixed breathing and no breathing, I just couldn't quite nail it. And then on top of that, it's you had the tuned IM prelim semis finals. Tuned IM was pretty late that day, with the award ceremony, drug testing. By the time you cooled down, got back, ate food, it ends up being a late night in general. And then on top of that, having caffeine, your heart's going to be going. And then the 100 fly was first event next morning. So it was definitely a tough night to get back, get everything I needed to recover, have a good sleep, wake up. And then I had the 100 fly and the 4x2 free prelims. So it was a pretty heavy morning post a pretty late night. And I probably could have done a little bit better, a better job of recovering in between. I feel like I did as probably as much as I could have. Maybe a few things I could have tweaked, trying to just settle down with the caffeine and all that on that night. But yeah, the 100 fly was a little disappointing. But again, it's like you always learn from stuff. So coming off of that, I know exactly what I need to change going into another meet if I have a late night, early morning kind of double. And obviously, with the 100 fly, trying to figure out that technique and just yeah, it's all learning, and that's what I love about the sport, because it's 9 times out of 10 it's never going to be perfect. So there's always something to work on, something to keep you hungry, and something for you to strive for next.
I always say this as like to give context when you're talking about especially big meets like this, and in my fellow pundits or reporters or people I'm talking to are like, okay, we yeah, sure, but that's no excuse. But going to a meet halfway around the world, it's an adjustment, right? And like you said, these are long nights, the final sessions, the athletes, you have to go through award ceremonies, you have to go drug testing, which usually takes a long, like hour, can take hours.
That can.
You have to eat and then you have to try to go to bed after drinking caffeine to get yourself ready for the final swim in a country that's on a 12-hour different time schedule than you. I mean, when I've been in the Middle East, I don't sleep for more than 4 hours at a time. And then I just sleep at random 4 hour intervals whenever I can fall asleep. Were you able to sleep that night?
Yeah, I think but by the time I got back to the hotel, I think I was on like the 11 p.m. bus. By the time I ate dinner, had my flush out, it was gone midnight, 12:30. I would say I probably fell asleep around 1 in the morning. But that was pretty average for most final sessions if you were done at the very end. Just the way things flow, that you kind of just have to accept that it's going to be a late night. Obviously, we were lucky that the obviously the morning session was early, but there was a huge gap between mornings and finals. So utilizing the nap, the ability to nap and kind of bank your rest on those naps, and just using that time to allow your body to recover from probably not a great sleep. With the caffeine sleep isn't always a great sleep, but going through those morning swims, coming back, getting the proper nutrition, and then getting back in bed and just trying to recover from that swim. So yeah, we definitely had early mornings, but we had the ability of a big nap in between to kind of fix that.
And then just again over looking at the overall big picture, it's an 8-day meet, like you said, a lot of swims, prelims, semis, finals. You three individuals and three relays. Is that correct?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then over the course of 8 days, so you're just like on all the time for over a week. Just coming back home. How do you get back into your normal day-to-day rhythm? How do you kind of come down from that, knowing that, okay, it's probably important to recover and you got to give yourself time to, just get back into normalcy, but you've got trials in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, as well
It's
as,
12. We got 12 weeks, and we're
oh,
doing
you've
a lot
got
of trials
12
this
weeks.
year. Yeah,
Okay.
which is very good.
But knowing you've got trials in 3 months and then the games hopefully a couple months after that.
Yeah, I think obviously the first thing is every swimmer knows that when you have a taper, you're in, your staging camp, and you're like, for us, we were in Turkey, and then we're in Doha. And for me, the swim meets are the most fun I have all year. So I'm coming off this extreme high of just being at a swim meet, being in these cool locations, being on taper, where it's like, obviously you're still working hard, but it's like you're going and you're like, so how much am I doing today? Coming back and then knowing that, like, all right, we get back on Tuesday, we're back in the pool Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, practices start. You got to enjoy it while it lasts, but you got to know that the work is still to come. So the biggest thing is just being able to have those mental breaks. And obviously maybe not so much now, but post Olympics and post trials, when the season does come to an end, that's when you can really take your big, big mental break and just know that, even though it does seem pretty far away, it to be honest, it's gonna come in a blink of an eye. The next few months are gonna go by really fast, and just gotta kind of buckle in and get ready to go and just enjoy the process. And then once the Olympics are finished and that the season does come to a close, that's when you can kind of kick your feet up and really decompress. But right now, because it is February, we knew going into the meet that if we wanted to compete at World Champs and then come into Olympic trials, we gotta know that as soon as Worlds are done, we're not going to be able to have a big break. We're not going to be able to, kind of decompress from that. We got to view it as almost like a mini home meet where, we'll have 1 or 1.5 days off, but then we're back into it. So just knowing that and being aware of that going into it, so that when it does arise, and like this week we're back into work and back training, it's not as big of a shock as it usually is. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so glad you made it home safe.
Thank you.
You are now back in Vancouver. You recently made the move to train at UBC. You came from Toronto. Can you tell me just about what motivated that move for you and how it's gone so far?
Yeah, the move's been great. Most importantly, I'm having more fun. I was at the High Performance Center in Ontario. It's a fantastic program, great coaches, great staff, great facility. The only issue with HPC Ontario, as and everyone knows this, is there's no school kind of attached to it. So you'll have a lot of young athletes and a lot of graduated athletes, and being 22, I'm always kind of in the middle, where there's a lot of young swimmers and a lot of older swimmers, and I'm always kind of the odd one out. I was definitely the last year or two struggling a little bit with just not really having those people to kind of relate to who are my age. And as good as it is having young swimmers kind of attacking you and keeping you honest in practice, being kind of a full-time swimmer, you want to be able to have, some of your boys there to kind of chill out a little bit. And at the High Performance Center in Vancouver, it's associated with UBC, and there's a lot more university athletes there and people my age, and just for where I'm at in my life, that's kind of where I need to be and people I need to be surrounded by. So last year, just it wasn't a great year mentally. It was very challenging. Talked to a lot of people, checked out a few places, and decided to make the move. And obviously going into an Olympic year, it's a little dicey making the move, but I knew that the work that I had done with Ryan and in Ontario, and the connection that the two centers have, that it was going to be an okay move, and I was going to be in good hands. And Ryan has set me up perfectly to transition with Scott. And I'm super grateful to have those two centers working together and viewing it as an athlete for Canada rather than two centers wanting something. So super grateful for that. And the transition was smooth and very happy to be swimming with people my age. We went to Doha with four guys and one girl. So a big group that was there. And I'm now training with people my age. I'm with my boys now, and it's a very good time, and I'm definitely a lot happier being in Vancouver.
That is a really special and cool thing to have. Like you said, not you're a Canadian athlete. You're an athlete for Canada. You're not having to feel like, oh, I'm leaving one center to go to another. You're still training for Canada, right? And just finding the best fit for you at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice to have coaches and support staff that do support that. So congrats.
Yeah,
I'm
thank
glad
you.
that transition is going well for you. Do you feel like the training itself or the work that you're doing differs quite a bit from Ontario to Vancouver?
I think, to be honest, this is my opinion. Once you get to a certain level in swimming, everyone kind of does this very similar stuff. It's important to have an aerobic base, but you need to be able to have some speed and swim fast and do threshold and do back end. So everyone kind of does the same stuff at this high level. Obviously coaches have their own different ways of doing it. Obviously Ryan's got his way of doing threshold and back end and all that stuff. And Scott's got his way, but at the end of the day, it is just work. And you just kind of have to not over as someone who overanalyzes everything, just going in and just knowing that they know what they're doing and trust what they're doing. And obviously the sets are a little bit differently, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm still training the same amount of hours, still training probably the same yardage, lifting the same amount. Like everything's very similar across both programs. And making that move over, it was better for where I'm at in my life right now, opposed to being in Ontario. So again, super grateful that it does work like that, because I know a lot of people struggle with transitionings, and those can be big, scary things. So super grateful to have that support around me and to make that transition smooth.
Absolutely. You said something earlier that piqued my interest. You said you trained USRPT when you were a kid. Can you tell me about that?
My home coach Todd Melton, we got a lot of we train out of a very small 6-lane 25 meter pool. We don't have access to long course, and my coach, he was very, he put a lot of emphasis on technique and swimming fast, and he obviously saw what kind of Mike Landrieu was doing and the whole swim fast to race fast. And that's something that we started back in 2014. So, doing those sets of 36 25s four times through, one of each stroke, or 20 50s three time. So yeah, it was something I did growing up. It was great. I think it definitely helped with my technique as I am an older swimmer now. It definitely taught me how to race, how to maximize the most of my swimming. But again, with most things, it's, if you trust something, it's going to work for you. And I trusted my coach fully, and it definitely worked out. As I got older, I probably definitely needed that aerobic base and need a little bit more mileage as you get heavier, just being comfortable swimming. So I feel like it was perfect for me then. And we still incorporate race pace stuff in training now. So, but yeah, when I was younger, when I was, I think it was like 14 to 18, I was doing USRPT and was kind of fully in depth in that. So it was kind of cool.
That is kind of cool. What did you, so you, I mean, you said you trusted your coach and you trusted the training. What did you think of the training? Because I mean, I think, and even Michael has said this, it's like it's work, and it's not like necessarily engaging work, right? I mean,
Yeah.
36:25s, you're just at race pace, like sounds kind of boring and sounds like a slog.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people who haven't done it need to actually do it to understand how difficult. I still to this day think that's some of the hardest training and most physically demanding stuff I've ever done. But yeah, swimming in itself is, I mean, let's be real, it's boring. You're staring at a black line for how many thousands of meters of practice. And but as a kid, all you want to do is race fast. And for me, I don't like swimming slow. I'm not very good at swimming kind of that like smooth, that that's what kind of why I don't do 1500 or 800 or 400. I like swimming fast. I like giving it everything. And being younger and having the ability to recover quickly and just being able to knock out all this stuff, it was perfect for me when I was a kid. And obviously training with, at the time, I think my group was 16 other swimmers, so there's always people to go after. And being a 25 or a 50, it's short enough where you're not beating people by 4 or 5 or lapping people. So there's always someone to race, someone to get going, and it's just always a great environment. And I'm very grateful that I was part of that when I was younger, and something I still look back on to this day.
That's really cool to hear. And again, a very unique way to train, especially as an age grouper, I think. 'Cause yeah, like you said, like Michael has been preaching for years, like it's not easy. It's work, but that's really, again, cool to hear. So moving forward, you're back in Vancouver now. What is the rest of your season leading up to trials look like? So the next, I guess, 12 weeks.
So it's a 12 week block till trials. So it's just getting prepped for Olympic trials now. Obviously the Olympics don't happen if trials doesn't go. So prepping for that, we'll have a few swim meets to kind of give us gauge points of where we're at in the season. And but ultimately it's just putting in the work. And again, everything that we learned from these worlds in February, if we need to alter a few things, we'll put those alterations in, and we'll go from there. So just we're right at the beginning of this cycle, so we're starting to have the meetings with the coaches and kind of sit down and find a game plan. But ultimately it's put the work in, get the head down, and give it everything we have leading into the Olympics.
Do you have a meet schedule leading up to trials? Do you know which meets you're heading to?
Yeah, I think we have the Canada Open in Toronto. That's one where a lot of Canadians are going to. It's a big Canada meet for us. Probably swim some off events just to have fun, break it up, and then I think we have Mel's Ajax. That'll be like a little gauge meet right beforehand, and then Olympic trials. So nothing too crazy. I think we're staying mainly in Canada. The times to go, abroad and to the US for some swim meets that will definitely take place next year. And this year it's kind of buckle down, get the head down and put in the work. So
Yeah. Do you have an event lineup for trials yet?
that's being an IM swimmer, it's tough because obviously there's a lot of events I want to do and a lot of events kind of clash. I'll definitely be swimming the 200 IM. That's on day 5. 100 flies on day 6. So I'll definitely throw that one in. Josh and Ilya are definitely the two threats there. But it's always good to kind of end the meet on 100 fly. And then, obviously want to be part of some relays this year. So the 100 free, 2 free. And then we'll see if I'll throw in maybe 100 stroke, 100 breast, 100 fly. Maybe a two breast. We'll see. I gotta sit down and see the schedule. And with 200 IM being later in the session, obviously we gotta be smart with what we do beforehand. It's another opportunity to step up, see where we're at, and I'll definitely love to be able to swim a few different events there.
Yeah. And just a last question. You mentioned Josh Liendo and Ilya Caroon. Canadian relays looking pretty exciting heading into these Paris Olympics, especially after a lot of really promising swims from yourself and a few of the other guys in Doha. How are you feeling about just the prospect of Canada's relays heading into
Yeah,
Paris?
obviously, everyone, every single country has strong relays, and we in Tokyo had a very good 4x1 free, and that gave us all a little bit of a glimpse of hope of like, putting four guys together who really want to achieve something, something can happen. So, Josh was definitely the one who really kickstarted kind of the success with male athletes. And, I'm great friends with Josh, and he's definitely inspired me a lot kind of going into these meets to want to achieve what he's done. And having those guys, fast guys coming up, it's being smart with how we build a relay team, but ultimately, using one another to bring the best out of each other. And kind of like I said in my interview after the 2 AM, it's like if you have a lane, you got to go for it. So hopefully, when come Paris time, we'll get a lane in the final, and we'll just have some fun with it. So.
You've been listening to the Swim Swam podcast. Stay tuned for new episodes every week. You can take Swim Swam podcast on the go by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. Look for links in the description below and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more videos as well.